All right, Stacey P here on KMMT, and as promised, I have book author Mike Lurie on the line. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to KMMT Radio, finally here.
Thank you.
Mike has written a book called Baseball Between Us, 16 years, 32 ballparks, 43,000 miles, a roadmap to a winning father-son relationship. And the first thing I have to ask you, Mike, is I have two boys who were teenagers once. So
right.
Whose idea was it to go on a road trip with your son?
Well, it was my idea, and my son was pretty quick to go along with it. He loved baseball. We've been going to games since he was about 5 years old and went to various parks. And as he got older, I started giving him more nuances of the game, just, you know, looking at strategies and who was going to be the starting pitcher. And I thought, well, maybe a road trip would be kind of a fun way to bond and see what would happen. And we ended up having a lot of adventures that I never could have predicted would have happened.
No, absolutely not. And just the fact that your teen son wanted to spend so much time with you is a testament to you as a father. I love the fact that on page 78, he did say that you needed a refresher course in parenting, though.
Well, yes, he said a lot of things about that. He was very critical of my parenting in a lot of ways and decided that he was going to have an attitude about things as well. One of the things he decided when he was on the trip was that he was going to start calling me by my first name.
Right, Mike, whenever he didn't want to get up.
He didn't want to get up. You know, teens always fight, but they love to sleep in, as you know. And so getting a kid up early in the morning at, 5:30, 6 o'clock to catch a flight, to catch a plane, to, arrive early at a ballpark is not exactly high on their priority list. So he decided that he would begin pestering me with his new annoying habit of, calling me by my first name. So all of a sudden, "Hi, Mike," became his favorite phrase, and he used it frequently just to bug me.
Well, of course, that's what they do. I think it's amazing. Now, you took several road trips to get through to all these ballparks, and it's really interesting to see the pictures of Matt and how he grew up through these road trips.
Yeah, he grew up, he started when he was 16, and just learning how to drive. And by the time we finished, he was 21, 22 years old, and we actually were able to, sip a beer together at the ballpark. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, that in Canada.
Right.
Canada. You know what I love? I love the fact that you really wanted your kids to go to college near a ballpark.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we have our priorities as parents,
And, right.
I figured that way, no matter where he showed up, I could always go to a game.
Well, and they both ended up going to USC.
They both ended up being Trojans, and it's very fortunate because it's very close to Dodger Stadium.
It is very close to Dodger Stadium. You know what I really loved about this book is that it's not just about the journey that you took with your son. It's also a history lesson as well, because you talk about Mount Rushmore. You talk about you have the balloon ride that you guys did.
Right.
That morning. You went to where the Tommy gun was made.
Uh-huh. And we also had a really interesting incident involving presidential history, Teddy Roosevelt. It turns out that we stayed at a hotel in Milwaukee where he was nearly assassinated back in 1912. And there's a plaque in the lobby that explained about that. And I thought, hey, this would be a great history lesson for, my son, Matt. Come look at this. And he wasn't all that impressed, because Roosevelt survived the assassination attempt. In fact, he made his famous saying about it takes a lot more than that to kill a bull moose. But
right.
Matt wasn't impressed at all. He goes, "Well, Dad, Teddy Roosevelt was shot only one time, but 50 Cent was shot 9 times."
Right. I remember that.
And that was much more important to him.
Well, speaking of music, you weave your musical taste throughout the whole thing, and I love this because I have two boys as well,
uh-huh.
And we always had music wars. I took my kids on a cross-country trip in 2000. Which I will never do again. And it was music wars, because you have here, you've got the Don McLean and you've got this kind of stuff that I listen to. And then there's the stuff that Matt liked to listen to.
Yeah, he was definitely into rap at that time, 50 Cent and Nelly and all those guys. And he just didn't appreciate, the classic rock stuff, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, the Allman Brothers, Led Zeppelin and all of that. And just wasn't into it at all, didn't find that impressive. And so, but I found that over time, in the beginning of the journey when he was 16, it was, he didn't like it. But as he got a little older, he started to appreciate my music. And then he started actually asking questions about it. And I think sort of the turning point was in Cleveland one time before an Indians game. We got to visit the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. And I saw that Pete Townsend and Chuck Berry were at the groundbreaking in 1993. I didn't know that.
That's right. And so we were there on the day that they were doing an exhibit on the Doors. And he was very much into the Doors at that point and thought, wow, how cool it was to see, Jim Morrison's jacket that he wore and T-shirts and paraphernalia. And we actually had discussions about music. And that's when things sort of flipped and we became, buddies and friends. And he started appreciating more and more. And by the end, I turned him on to some Jimi Hendrix and, you know, cranked it up loud on the stereo in the car. And he was like, Dad, this guy is great. And I was like, well, finally, you appreciate my music.
Yeah, finally. So what I loved as the few arguments that you wrote about here, especially the one where you stopped at the biggest stuffed buffalo, which is, what, 26 feet tall, something like that?
Yeah, that was in a little town called Jamestown, North Dakota, and it's just a little, you know, highway tourist attraction. But, you know, I thought this would be a great thing to see, and I wanted Matt to get out to take a picture so we can show everybody, you know, how big it is compared to a human being. Well, he didn't want to have anything to do with that. Dad, I'm tired. I don't want to go out. I'm tired of being your showpiece.
No, here's what he said. So what am I? Just a prop for your pictures? I'm tired of being a pawn in your little game of MapQuest. I just want to have my own space. End quote.
Yeah, he ripped me a lot about that, and I found, Stacey, that the thing that kind of worked best was using food as a motivator. Well, you know, I told him, Matt, if you take this picture just real quick, I'll get you whatever you want, you know, at the next convenience store. So he bought it, and we did that, and, you know, got him Pringles and a Dr. Pepper or something. And
don't tell Mom.
Yeah, and don't tell Mom, of course. Don't want to get busted.
No, not for that.
You know, it seemed to work, and he just didn't like being having his pictures taken at all these landmarks, and I think now he's come to appreciate that, oh, I see what your plan was. Now I get it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Isn't it funny how they grow up, and then they look back and appreciate what you've tried to do for them?
Exactly.
So how irritated did he get with your lack of sense of direction?
Oh, my gosh. One of the things that he got very irritated about was the fact that I am terrible about directions. I get lost repeatedly. In fact, he started giving me a new name for me. He started calling me Wrong Way Mike. And inevitably, in whatever city we were in, I would take the wrong direction to the ballpark, to the train station. One time we were on our way to Fenway Park, and I deliberately picked a hotel that was really close to Fenway because I wanted to you know, make sure we got there in time, and started walking the wrong way. And Matt's like, Dad, this doesn't look like it. Everybody's going the other direction. And I'm like, you know, no, this is right. I'm taking a shortcut. Because, you know, as a dad, you can't let on that you're lost.
Right.
And then finally we walked and walked, and all of a sudden there was a sign that said, Welcome to Brookline. I knew we weren't in Boston anymore. And I figured somehow we better retreat and go the other way. And, of course, I got lots of heat for that.
Of course.
And we took wrong trains. We took just about everything.
Of course.
So he rattled me about that, but I think, you know, in the end, the fact that I had vulnerabilities, the fact that I had weaknesses kind of made us bond together. It, you know, showed him that Dad wasn't perfect either and made mistakes, and we can all learn from them.
Now, I thought it was really cool that you were with Matt when Barry Bonds hit his 715th home run.
That was one of the highlights, Stacey, of the trip, was being there. The electricity in that park, no matter how you feel about Barry Bonds as a player, and yes, of course, his career has always been stained and tainted by the performance-enhancing drugs, but everybody in the park, the 43,000-plus that were there that day, were just hoping and praying that he would hit that big home run to eclipse Babe Ruth, and it happened in the fourth inning. He drilled the ball deep over the center field fence, and the electricity in that park when that happened was unbelievable. Streamers in the air, you know, fireworks, you know, banners left and right, people screaming and yelling. It went on for like 5 minutes of just a standing ovation. It was electric.
Well, what's really cool is that you have a friend named Ron Hyde who actually kind of grew up with Barry Bonds, was sort of his quasi-babysitter.
Yeah, and Ron is a good friend of mine and a fellow broadcaster, and he, when he was about 16, lived in for the summer in Southern California, and that was the time that Barry Bonds was 12 and living in the Anaheim area because his dad, Bobby Bonds, was on the Angels. And Ron's job was to basically babysit him. In fact, the mom paid him $50 a game to take care of Barry, which was pretty nice. And they ended up doing fun stuff and, you know, going out to parks and hitting baseballs. And Barry was starting to hit right-handed because that's what his dad, you know, was a right-handed hitter. And Ron saw that he had much greater power lefty and said, why don't you try hitting lefty? And sure enough, of course, eventually he did. And now is one of the most prolific home run hitters on the left side of anybody.
Now, I got to say, this is really funny. Now, my stepfather, his name was Stanley Spiro,
uh-huh.
And he was Gene Autry's right-hand man for many, many years. He was the general manager for KMPC. And so when my mother married him, she spent a lot of time going to Angel Stadium. And the fact that you actually got out of the car on the freeway just so you wouldn't miss the first pitch.
Well, I'm a little fanatic about baseball, I'll admit it. And, you know, we got caught up in this horrible, horrible traffic jam, and I'm fanatic about getting the to the first pitch of the game. To me, it's a very pure moment because it's 0-0. There's nothing but zeros on the scoreboard. It's kind of like a painting, you know, an impressionist painting. You never know how it's going to look until it starts actually happening, the first pitch of the game, the first hit, the first error. And so I really want to be there for the first pitch. And we were hopelessly stuck in traffic. And I was frustrated, and I said, we're not going anywhere. And my son said, well, Dad, why don't you just walk to the game? And I said, okay, I will. And I got out of the car, grabbed my ticket, and ran to the ballpark, which was about a mile away. And then my family eventually showed up like in the fourth inning.
Yeah, they did. And what I love about this book, it's not just about the baseball. It's sort of like a memoir as well. And you went to the place where you grew up in Connecticut, and it wasn't exactly what you had hoped.
Right. I grew up in Stamford, Connecticut, about 35 miles from New York City. And, you know, when you go back home, you always like to look at your memories and, you know, visit old friends and stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, that old saying, you can't go home again, because I went home to look at my old house and to show Matt and found out that it was dilapidated and painted over with spray paint and graffiti and boarded up. And it was a foreclosure house. So that was kind of depressing, and later, of course, I learned that they knocked it down, so it's not even there anymore. And then we went to the cemetery. I always visit my parents there, and my sister, unfortunately, who lost her life when she was just 20, was buried there, and that was very, very tough, and I kind of felt like I was losing everything, you know, my home, my family, my sister, and Matt put his arm around me and said, Dad, you know, we got to move forward, and, you know, we got a ball game coming up. Let's go do that. And that kind of got me back on track, and I found that he was, you know, helping me just as much as I was hoping to help him.
Right. I mean, we're almost out of time here. I would love to, you know, touch real quick about running into Dave Stewart in the elevator.
Yeah. Well, that was in Toronto. He was there for the Toronto Blue Jays were having a reunion for their back-to-back world championships in 92 and 93. And I was hoping maybe we'd run into a ball player because we were staying at the same hotel. And I got off the elevator and opened up the door, and there he was, just, you know, sitting in the lobby playing on his BlackBerry some video games and stuff. And I went up to him and said, Dave, you know, hi, I'm writing a book, can I talk to you? And he was kind of disinterested and looking more at the BlackBerry. And I said, finally, well, you know what, I'm from California. And he goes, oh yeah, where? And I said, Sacramento. He goes, oh, my mom lives in Elk Grove, it's just the next town over. And all of a sudden we had an instant rapport, and we talked and did an interview, and he turned out to be a really nice guy.
And, you know, and I think it's really cool that your son, who actually worked in New York for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. I guess, one summer, took you to the Mickey Mantle restaurant.
That was also, Stacey, one of the highlights. Mickey Mantle was my childhood hero growing up, and I just loved everything about him and how he hit those terrific home runs. And he's got a restaurant in New York in Central Park that has all these video screens and games and paraphernalia from various players all over baseball. And Matt had gone there when he was working, and I had never been there before, so he actually took me, and that was kind of nice. It was sort of a, you know, a passing of the torch from one generation to the next, that as I was leading him along the country, he was also finding fun stuff for me to do as well. And we really bonded, you know, on this trip, Stacey, and became much, much closer, and today we're, you know, we are baseball buddies.
That's awesome. I don't want to give away the ending of the book and the cool things that Matt says to you, but one last question.
Sure.
What is it about baseball that brings fathers and sons together?
Well, I think part of it's tradition. You know, baseball and parenting have a lot in common. Both have rules, both have tradition, and both have a boss.
Right.
And so as long as the father or the mom is, you know, listened to, things are great. But when that doesn't happen, things can go a little bit awry, and you have some conflict. But the thing about baseball is the pace of the game. I think that makes it so special. You can actually have conversations between pitches and talk about things, you know, hit and run or strategies. But beyond that, you can also talk about important things like, you know, tell me about who you're seeing, or do you have a girlfriend, you know, who are you going to bring to the junior prom, that kind of thing. And after you weave that in after a couple of baseball questions, they kind of lower their guard a little bit, and you can actually relate and have a rapport. So it's the pace of the game that I think allows baseball to be special, where you can actually have conversations between pitches, between innings, that you really can't do in any other sport.
All right, terrific. All right, the book is called Baseball Between Us by Mike Lurey, L-U-E-R-Y. Mike, where can people get the book?
Yeah, it's available now through pre-order on my website at www.baseballbetweenus.com. And in addition, I'm doing lots of blogging about just fun little baseball facts and anecdotes and stories and interviews and things like that to give people something to read and have fun until baseball season starts, and then the book will actually come out March 1 of next year, just in time for spring training.
All right, terrific. That's all right, Mike, thank you so much. I'm glad we finally were able to do this.
I am too. Thank you.
All right,
you so much.
Don't go away, Mike. We'll be right back after this.